You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 67 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I'm your host, Dion Morales, and today I am joined by Just Justero Things.
I'm going to throw four things at you. None of them are good.
And Stress Me to Stress You.
Can we sing the Sweet Caroline song?
No.
Yeah. Stressing me.
Stressing you.
Sweet Ezra.
That's going to sound so terrible, but, you know.
Yeah, I think it sounded just bad enough to not get a copyright strike, so I think we're good.
Yeah.
All right, just a couple things to address before we get into our content. So I know that we missed last week, and we've missed a couple of the Wednesday night streams. Things have been a little bit crazy here. I've been doing construction on my home, and there was even drama up until today. Literally almost had an electrical fire this morning. Everybody's safe. Everybody's okay. The problem will be fixed. So thank you for everybody's patience. But we're back online. We're here. And hopefully we're without issues for the next few weeks here. Anyway, upcoming streams. This Friday, we have our Friday night grab bag stream on July 6th. There is not a Wednesday night stream because it's July 4th. The store's closed. We have nowhere to go to play. We will be celebrating the independence of our United States of America. And our next store championship stream is going to be TPK Games on July 14th. So you guys can join us there. We'll be starting, I think that one starts at noon Central. So you can tune in there. And if you haven't heard, we got big news. The big news is, yes, huge news, guys. Gold Squadron Podcast is going to be the official stream of the United States National Championships of X-Wing at the Nova Open this year.
We did it, guys! We did it!
Yep. Now, if you guys are aware, before the streamer who had done it before, Steel TV, Aaron Utley, he's not going away. He's not stopping or anything like that. He's just not available to do it for Nova, and he was there, you know, he's the one that started streaming at their event, so that's why he had been doing that event. And when he wasn't able to, I was asked to step in, and I said, yeah, you know what, I'll do it. I am sacrificing playing, because that was one of the events I was going to play in this season, but I think we'll have a good time. It's going to be one of our last 1.0 events, should be a lot of fun. And that's out of Washington, D.C., and that's going to be in that's in September, I believe. So that was a little bit of a tease that I gave you guys last week. I couldn't say it was official yet because we needed to pass it by the board of the Nova Open and all that. So some of you had guessed it. I just teased it last time.
Unlock the hologram.
Alrighty, so our first topic for today is going to be store championships. So, Will, I know you weren't able to come up to Chicago this weekend to play with us, but I know that I think it was a couple weeks back you had a store championship and got yourself that regional buy.
Oh yeah, that was out at First Turn Games in Cedar Rapids. Or Cedar Falls. I get the two confused. yeah, that was good. I played against a lot of the guys in Iowa. Kind of brought a lot of people out. It's kind of a central region, I guess, between like Des Moines and Iowa City. But yeah, I got to play against the Reaper. Or not the Reaper, sorry. A Krennic Whisper. It was terrifying.
Yeah.
Why? Why was it so terrifying?
I had advanced sensors, and the decloak and advanced sensors barrel roll, like being able to go choose that left or right, it's a real big guessing game of where that ship's going to be.
Yeah. So are you familiar yet, Nate, with Director Krennic?
Yeah. In fact, like, a lot of people have been misusing Director Krennic a lot. A lot of people have been trying to use, like, Director Krennic on Omega Leader, but we found out you're really not supposed to do that.
Right, because it's a First Order ship. But do you understand the ability?
Yeah, it's super, like, I don't know. It's weird. Like,
so here's the very basic version. I feel like
it's really, really badly worded is my issue. It's really poorly worded.
Here's the basics. Try to
clean it up.
It's fire control system. You get a free fire control system with that crew card. And you get a free fire control system with that card. And as well, when you attack, you're able to spend a die result to remove a shield. That's it. It's those two things. When you have it on Whisper herself, because you put Krennic on Whisper, she has a crew slot, and you select herself to get the condition. So
that's to get an extra health.
Oh yeah, and an extra shield, right?
Yeah, shield.
Mm-hmm. So that's it's very good. Especially she's already shooting four dice, and if you get three hits in her blink, you're like, well, I'm gonna spend that blink and take a shield. Like it's really good, and then that frees up the sensor slot to put in advanced sensors instead of having fire control system, because that's already built into the Krennic card. So that's that. So congratulations, Will, getting that store champ. I know you said you used your Strezra build. Now here's the question. Now that you got your buy, are you going to put that on the shelf and start flying some other stuff?
I just got the Reaper and the Saw's Renegade, so I haven't even put that stuff on the table yet, to be honest with you. I would like to start playing that Reaper, man. It sounds so fast.
Yeah.
Then it sounds real good. Also, played against a crack swarm of X-Wings. And that was terrifying. Like, man, if I didn't have Lore protecting Miranda, they would have just killed her in the first round of shooting.
That's scary. It's terrifying. Sure.
I had speaking of jousting lists, it's hard not to joust that, because that's kind of what my list is doing as well. So just kind of like, see how it goes and come up in there. Hopefully take one out or two.
Mm-hmm. And then this weekend on the 30th, we streamed live from the Gaming Goat in Chicago. There's a lot of Gaming Goats. There's the one in the city limits here for us. And Nate won, and I got second place. There was only 12 people in that one. It's a very small store. They don't actually have an X-Wing scene there. They bought the kit and contacted me and said, hey, we want to run this store championship, would you run it? And I was like, okay. And we did a great job there. We were able to fill all 12 spots.
It was kind of like the Gold Squadron finals, or is what we're saying. I think most of us kind of picked like some new build stuff that we're not necessarily very familiar with. So it was kind of nice and interesting to kind of do something different and everything, trying that setting, because there were only 12 players. Mm-hmm. But the people there were so nice. Like, the guy who owns that Gaming Goat, he is super nice and just really great.
Yeah, so if you're local to that store, they're looking to start building that scene there at the Gaming Goat, and they're willing to get the prizes and put in the money and stuff. So kudos to them. It was great working with you guys at that store. And Nate won with our playbook list that we'll be getting to here in a little bit, and that's the Joustero list.
Which I'm not very good with, but somehow I was able to pull off enough wins. In fact, because our little store championship was what was it supposed to go? We said like we're going to go four rounds and then there should just be one 4-0 at the end of like that.
There was a possibility to have one 4-0, or it would end up being the highest 3-1, which is what it ended up being.
Yeah, because the 4-0s both got pared down and then got kind of knocked out a little bit. And so I was the best of the 3-1s, unfortunately. So win by default, not by skill.
It's fine. A regional buy is a regional buy. Yours, Yours doesn't do anything less for you than anyone else.
No, I know. I wish they had the plaques, though. It's not a big deal.
It's right. You got that little card. You get a little baseball.
I'd rather have a plastic card than the plaque. Oh, yeah. I love those plastic cards.
The plastic cards are sweet. As the TO, I did get two of them. So that was pretty awesome. And I'm flying those ships, so that works. I was flying four X-Wings and a Z-95. William and I had been going back and forth on – I told him, I said, hey, I want to fly four to five X-Wings. And I gave him a couple of the ideas I was going with. And actually the list that you played in the final, right, Will, was the one that I ended up settling on. And that was three of them, Angel Zealots, Cavern Angel Zealots with Crackshot, Flight Assist Astromech, the S-Foils, and Integrated Astromech, one of them with Selflessness and R4-D6, and a Bandit Z-95 with Harpoon and Chips. So, had a lot of fun flying these ships. It was great. And it just looked awesome having these five very Star Wars-y ships on the board moving around. And I felt that I played really well in all of my games. My only loss was to Nate. And Nate, man, that I lost because of a 0.3% chance to get only one hit on that freaking harpoon missile. I was a little – if you watch the stream, that one was on stream. I was a little like, ah, dang it. I was upset.
Yeah, actually, that was one of the few games that I caught Dion on the stream. And, man, things are just not going. Nate didn't get the trajectory bomblet off, which was great.
Yeah. And that's why I – that's one thing we're going to talk about in the playbook is how – why I took the approach I did. And I felt like I did everything right. And just the dice didn't quite go my way. I rolled four dice on the harpoon missile on Nim and got three eyeballs and a blank. I was like, okay, we'll target lock. And got the same result. And got it shipped for one. So
it still hit, though, didn't it?
It did.
And then so that's what I saw was, it doesn't take much pilot skill, like just arrow, to get over that.
Yeah. So I was a little mad, especially because all of Nate's harpoons were hitting for four.
Oh yeah.
He doesn't even see, he doesn't even respond.
Sorry, I had to deal with the flooding thing for a moment there.
Oh, you're good.
So I had to step away. No, me and Dion's game was it was a dice game, and Dion never always says like dice aren't a real thing, but in that game it was dice. It was absolutely dice, I think. But
are you admitting that I flew better than you in that game?
Is that you definitely flew better than me in that. I'll say that. There were some times I flew to slightly better, but for most part, yeah, it was dice. So. This build was actually who I've been talking to a lot about. This was Tristan from PTL League, the Prototype Toronto League. Him and Cameron use it and everything. I've been asking them like what positioning, how they go about doing stuff. I don't think it's like as indestructible as they make it out to be, but I mean, yeah, it's got one hell of a joust.
To defeat an enemy, you must know them. Not simply their battle tactics, but their history, philosophy, art.
All right, well, let's get into our second topic. I think that's a perfect transition. And if you've been listening to Gold Squadron for a while, you know that we started a series called the Playbook Series, where we take lists and we start breaking them apart, give you guys our insights into them, what we've seen, their strengths, their weaknesses, some strategies while playing it, or strategies against, depending on how you want to look at it. We took a little bit of a hiatus on the segment when Ghost Fan got really big, and it was like we did one on Ghost Fan, and we're like, well, I guess we'll just kind of let Sleeping Dogs lie. But now with Wave 14 out there and some new Predators out there, it's a good time to bring it up. And of course, we will be doing this once we get into second edition, because there is going to be a bunch of new lists, and we don't know what they are yet. So we'll start taking it apart. So the list has been named Joustero. Jousting and just
Cameron wants to call it that. I think the PTL guys say no.
It's a fantastic name.
I think so.
Cameron, you are correct. Cameron Murray from PTL. It is called Jousta Row. I'm making it. I'm declaring it here on Gold Squadron Podcast. So the list, for those of you who are not familiar with it, it's Captain Nim. This is the scum Captain Nim. With Veteran Instincts, Action Munitions, Harpoon Missiles, Bomblet Generator, Trajectory Simulator, Genius, Guidance Chips, and the title, you notice that there is no turret on there. You don't have enough points for the turret, and that comes out to 41 points. Then Tarani Kolda in the Kimogila with Veteran Instincts, Harpoon Missiles, R5TK, just because, and Guidance Chips comes out to 32 points. And then Captain Justero with Deadeye, Harpoon Missiles, Contraband Cybernetics, Guidance Chips, Munitions Failsafe, and now Nate, because it's free, put on there the Multispectral Camouflage.
Yeah, because it's
free. Because it's free. So just a couple of things on how this works, if you're not super familiar with it. In the ideal situation, the players playing this is what they want. They want to have all three of their ships pointed at you the turn before you engage. They want that. That way, when Nim does the trajectory simulator with the bomblet generator, it hopefully does a damage, and that is Justero's opportunity to use a Deadeye harpoon missile. So that's how Justero gets his attack off before his PS4. So you got damage from the bomb. You got that harpoon missile from Justero. Then at PS10, you have both Tyrannic Kolda and Nim, and by then, they've probably killed something. Something just gets erased off the table, if they're able to get that off. And it's absolutely devastating. Like, you can lose some very defensive ships. You could take out an Auditor, no problem. Yeah, you could definitely with take all out, that.
Lorik in one round if he set it up correctly.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the strengths when I look at this list are, you know, the potential to get all three harpoon missiles at PS10. And then plus, you can't forget that Justero gets to shoot again at pilot skill 4 at his normal shot. The ability to have that very strong focus fire, and just the ability to cut through all of the defensive modifiers, because they have, you know, they have their target lock and harp on the guidance chips.
Do you think this could actually one round a Miranda? Will, what do you think?
You better have selflessness, because well, I guess you could take draw. You could draw all three crits, but man,
is draw or just like any during an attack?
Oh, it's any attack.
Okay.
But all that splash damage, you got potentially like four
up to four,
five, six. No, because the
up to three, sorry,
two.
Yeah,
Bomblet could do two, and then the three harpoon missiles could do three more splash damage. That could just straight up kill Ezra without him even being like shot at.
Yep.
Just because he's near Lore dies.
Let's do the math out really quickly. So let's say at best odds and everything, right? The two do damage, right? Like the bomb does. Justero shoots and everything does four. Let's say, just for sake of it, Miranda does like, you know, a C-3PO thing or whatever. It gets the two evades plus a third one from Lorik, right? Or maybe a draw from Lorik. So they could disengage one whole missile.
But you're that's one missile, and you've already taken three damage.
Exactly.
And then you still have two more missiles coming in, which brings you to, we're at three now after that reduction. You have so that plus four, that takes you to seven, plus four again, which is 11, and then Justero still gets to shoot again.
Yeah.
So that's a lot it's a lot of damage. Even with selflessness, you could still maim a Miranda. You know, you might leave her at one or two. But here's the thing. If you take like a selflessness and you're taking like four hits off of, off of a Miranda, that they might just say, okay, well, let's just kill Lorik then instead. They have to have set up the target locks, of course, and have that all set up. But, I mean, something will get deleted if you allow all of that to happen. And this is where we could start talking about some of the weaknesses of the list. And while we all know that Trajectory Simulator is super strong, Trajectory Simulator is also a potential weakness for this list, because Justero does require that in the initial joust, that bomb to go off and do damage. You do have the variations on the dice that could not go. Or in Nate and I game, Nate and I's, my, you know what I'm trying to say, words are hard. In our game, Nate, I was able to engage you before you were turned to me, which is the ideal situation, right? Like you, yeah. You were facing basically towards me. I was already on your flank. And then you were able to turn towards me, but you were not able to Trajectory Simulator and get all the shenanigans off.
No,
to, I wasn't on that first round.
Do that the way that I wanted to. Plus, like sometimes, Justero might be a little bit too far forward, so then he risks like being hit himself with the bomb. And there are so many times I'm like, maybe because I'm not good with flying with it. I know like other people are better flying with it than me, and like usually don't have that issue. But like sometimes you just do it because you want to be able to get the shot. Now, the other thing is, now just because the trajectory goes off, or like let's say like the trajectory and the bomb goes off and they roll nothing, that doesn't mean that Justero doesn't get to do his thing, because the splash damage from Harpoon will trigger him again.
Right. But one thing that you have to remember is that the splash damage. So if you're shooting target A and it has Harpoon condition, and you trigger it and you get a splash damage, you can only attack with Justero one of the other ships that got splashed onto. You can't shoot that initial ship. Now, that's what I'm talking about. The ideal situation, like that's something that did happen in our game, Nate. But the ideal situation for those people flying that list is they want to be able to take all of those dice and just annihilate something, right? What is that? Seven... 4 times 3 is 12 plus 3, 15 dice. 15 attack dice going into one ship with heavy modifiers. Like, that's absolutely devastating.
I think if – I don't know the exact math on it, but I think if two of these fought each other, they could one round each other. And like, get it like Simo, like with all the crazy splash damage.
They could, yeah. That'd be hilarious. Watch it burn. So and with that, like, let's go back to my point is Nate was coming down the board and I knew I had to engage him quickly. If he starts with something like a one forward, I immediately had my opportunity, because I took my X-Wings and I went four forward, boost around the corner, let's go. And I was able to engage him at that angle where the trajectory simulator wasn't a thing on the initial joust. And that was my opportunity to dig in some damage. I was able to kill Tarani on turn one, but she still got her harpoon, all that. Still, like, ugly stuff still happened, but it gave me a chance to get ahead on the damage curve. One of the other things that this list is susceptible to is being dragged through the rocks, because they do want to have all three of those ships shooting. One thing I could have done, I wanted to play the game, and Nate wanted to play as well. What I could have done, me flying the list I had more dice in Final Salvo than he did. I had, what is that? 3 times 4, 12, 13, 14. I had 14 dice in Final Salvo, and he had 9. So I could have been like, you know what? You come on over here. I Fortress or something like that. And if you can get that person in a tournament setting, of course, to go through the rocks and start spreading out Justero and Tarani, and you can get one to be hung out to dry, and you take it out early, you ruin the combo. And I was able to beat a couple of these in practice using that method. It's just like, fine, I know I'm not going to engage on your terms. You come to me, let's break up your formation, and then your trick is gone, essentially. Is what I was looking for.
Yeah, so that's number one thing that I've seen, like, a lot of these people play this list, is that they purposely will Fortress, and then they're like, well, I get 9 dice, and half the time they're willing to take that risk of, you know, 50-50 bid. So
It just depends. Yeah, it depends on what they're flying against,
who you're playing, and like, yeah,
what the final salvo is.
What's funny is that the other night, Wednesday, I actually flew against one of our other Gold Squadron members, Darwin. If you don't know him, he's Night Dice Darwin. He actually used like Vessery, Omega Leader, and like whatever the new Reaper dude is. He cheated with it because we didn't know that you couldn't use a Mega Leader. But he came down both lanes, like both sides at me at the same time. And he was actually able, which I realized and everything, he planned out very well. He got close enough that I couldn't harpoon anything that he was trying, any of his ships and everything. He kind of gave me the situation of between, do I go after Vessery with a tractor beam, or do I go against Omega Leader and this Reaper with Krennic on it? So, and I chose Omega Leader and the Reaper, but the problem was is that he closed distance really, really quickly and far faster than I thought he would. So he got me out of position. And I feel like that's one of the weak draws to this.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any experience with this one, William?
Yeah, I played it at the latest Adepticon. I just like use the Lorcs and Miranda's kind of like turret, so I don't have to really engage. I was just kind of was trying to fly past them. And then I sent Ezra in as basically a harpoon bomb that would die. yeah, that's exactly what happened. He like K-turned just arrow and shot Ezra when a bomb went off, and that splashed damage and killed his just arrow and hurt him as well. It was like just sent him in as a bomb to get away from Miranda with that splash damage.
I like that.
If a bomb goes off and everything, if it hits like let's say Ezra first, does Jostero get to immediately attack then?
Or the person controlling the bomb should say like not their ships first. You should always do your enemy's ships, before your own ships.
Because I mean, the way the bombs go and everything, bomb goes off, it hits Ezra and Jostero. Does that mean that like they both have to take damage and then Jostero gets to attack, or is it immediately after?
No. It's
a nested trigger.
Yeah, like how it was explained to me is that when one of those things happens, like if a bomb hits quick draw, the moment quick draw takes damage, she takes the shot, like in her like initiative order that you've chosen to be hit by the bomb. In that instance, he chose Ezra. Ezra got damaged. Jostero shot at him. He took the harpoon and then got hit with the bomb as well and died. But he had already shot because the same thing with like Quick Draw. If Quick Draw dies or gets damaged by a bomb or something, you do that whole shot before someone would shoot back at her or something, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But if you do Jostero first and he just dies to the bomb or whatever, then he's off the table before the other ship takes the bomb.
Or a crit, like a what you call it? Like a blinded pilot.
Weapons or disabled? Like that. Oh, blinded would be terrible right then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, when you're facing off against this list, if you can avoid, if you don't have, make sure you actually think about this. If you don't have the defensive capability to joust this list, do not do it. Like, try really hard not to get into a face-to-face with it, because it is not going to go well for you. It's going to be bad.
Draw it through the rocks. Make sure that you draw it into a position where it can't, like, you'll get all of its guns, or it has to reposition, because I feel like any formation flyers, if you draw them into the rocks, eventually they'll start to bump and break away, and then things don't go well if they're not the greatest players. I mean, even good players sometimes make that mistake. What do you do about the castle then?
So the castle is a little tough. You have to assess what you have. What did you bring? So if you had castled against me, Nate, I would have just not engaged you, because I say I have more dice like that. I have that, that freedom, that advantage there. Go, okay, you castle. I might have just I've practiced getting into a castle with lists, like a forced castle. Say, okay, well, then I guess we're not playing. I would have done that. Now, if you don't have that dice advantage. You have to make a decision. If you're in a tournament, if they decide to castle, you think I cannot engage their list, the correct decision might be to take the risk, even if you're on the losing side of the final salvo, and go and leave that game with 100 points of MOV, rather than just saying, well, like, I don't have a chance, let me go joust, and you end up losing 100-0 or something like that, which gives you end with nothing, 0 points, and they walk away with 200. So it's really dependent on where you are in a tournament. Like if we're talking about best case scenario, you're on a winning track and you come up against this list, and let's say you have something like 6 dice in final salvo and you can't joust it, honestly, your best chance might be just to take the salvo and wait it out. But let's say you want to play. Let's say your decision is to play. I think if you have at least, let's say even 2 ships, if you have 2 ships come from 2 different angles, they're going to have
to side. Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to have to commit to the left or the right. Most of the time they're set up at this like 45 degree angle where they can break either way, left, right, or straight, make them commit. And then you have to try to punish them from the backside. Now, Nim does have the bombs out the back, but most likely he's going to be using the trajectory simulator. So what I like is if you could try to engage at range 3, okay, and maybe even engage where at least one of their ships is just out of range. Now, that's all range control. Maybe you have a barrel roll where you can just sneak back a little bit. If you can avoid taking all the shots on a turn, the following turn you set up some blocks, and then you can get behind them with both ships. Now they're going to have to move their formation around. They don't have their nice little pretty kill box anymore, their laser of death, their harpoon lane, as I like to call it. And there's your opportunity right there.
Yeah, that's actually what happened with me in when I played against the Will's list during the store tournament that we did. I got kind of weirdly ranged where not everyone could attack the same ship. So that really, really, really mattered. The fact that I couldn't have all my guns facing forward and doing that stuff. Yeah, if you have a fast ship and everything, you can always just try to get in their face. Like with my Ray Lowrick thing, essentially, if I kind of call it right and everything, and if I can get at range 1, then that's fine for me. I'm fine at being at range 1 because then I can do things. But you have to be careful about getting at range 1 of these guys too, because next turn, they're all just going to flip on you. Because Justero can use contraband, get a focus, flipper, 4K, oh, and he gets his missile anyways. If Tarani target locked you, or Nim target locked you the round before, they're just going to turn on you, throw their missiles. So you have to be careful of those kind of maneuvers as well.
Yeah. Contraband Cybernetics is a sneaky good card. It's very good.
I like how you can get the multi-special camo now. That's so good for just free.
Yeah.
It's good for free. What is that?
Just a chance to lose a target lock.
Yeah, that's outrageous.
So just Darrow is he's not harpoon proof. But he does have some tech against the harpoon. And here's the thing with the Contraband Cybernetics. If you do manage to dodge the harpoon from Justero, munitions failsafe, which did come in into play in a stream we had a couple weeks ago. I guess I actually didn't shoot my missile. I don't lose it. 5K on you. Contraband Cybernetics. Get a focus, and then I'll try again. So, Contraband Cybernetics can definitely do some work in this squad. It's some of the best uses I've seen of it.
Here. It really, really murders. Mm-hmm. One thing that me and Will were talking about with Lorik and C-3PO and just in general. So, if you have C-3PO and you have the new, what's it called, camouflage?
Multispectral.
Yeah, multi-spectral camouflage. So when you get that target lock on you, you could technically, because it says you have to roll a die. Well, C-3PO says that, you know, when you're rolling a defense die. So you could essentially C-3PO and get that done anyways and just take off the target lock no matter what.
Yeah, it works just like C-3PO and Lando crew works. You can C-3PO Lando crew.
And that's I would caution our listeners and our players to double check with your judge before that, because I'm seeing judges do it both ways. Now I believe that it does work. I wish it didn't personally, but it does. So it is what it is.
I find that answer vague and unconvincing.
All right, let's get into our next segment. Today dropped our second edition preview of the week. Who knows? Maybe we'll get some more. We got the Fire Spray preview. Now, a lot of the cards that were in this preview, which they quote-unquote spoiled a lot, we had seen a lot of them in their previews and when they went through the conversion kits during the FFG stream and all that. But we did get a couple of new pieces of information, some confirmation on pilots that are coming back, and just some little interesting tidbits and some things I want to point out and talk about as we continue. So they showed us five pilots in the article text. Now, I know that these articles have not been 100% trustworthy when it comes to information. The article does say that there are going to be six pilots. They actually say six unique pilots, but I think they're probably saying unique in the sense of four, like six different pilots, as opposed to six game vocabulary unique
pilots.
The only thing that we don't have is the generic on this. We don't have a generic. Maybe there is going to be another quote unquote unique one, but more likely than not, I think that's just a vocabulary mix up there. So we already knew about Boba Fett. He essentially has the same ability. We knew Cath Scarlet, we knew Crassus Trellick, and we knew Koshka Frost. We'll go through some of the less known ones. So Boba Fett, and we'll go through all of them here real quick. Boba Fett's ability, so if you're not familiar, these Fire Spray is going to be getting the focus, the target lock, a red reinforce, and the boost action. Boba Fett is initiative 5. He has 3 dice out the front arc and the back, 2 agility, 6 hull, 4 shields, and his ability reads, while you defend or perform an attack, you may reroll one of your dice for each enemy ship at range 0 to 1, range 0 being touching, and range 1. So same ability as what he had before, nothing different there. The new one, quote-unquote new one, that was spoiled, that we weren't sure if he was going to make the jump into second edition, was Iman Azzamin. Nate, can you go ahead and read that ability for me?
Yeah, it's the same thing. If you would drop a device, notice it specifically says device this time, using a one-straight template, you may use the hard 3, straight 3, or, you know, basically left or right. So he's essentially the same thing.
But they added little sneaky things in here, though. They added the 3 straight. Iman couldn't do that before. So the 3 straight is in there to be able to use that to drop it. And they don't say bomb. They don't use the bomb symbol. They say device. So in the future, you know, we know that bombs are devices. But if they come up with other devices that can go on Iman, he'd be able to use it. So a little bit more flexibility on him. I think it just makes him a little bit more viable of a bomber, especially with the changes happening to bombs and how they work and the timing. There's no more move and drop a bomb, except for Rig Cargo. Rig Cargo still does that, but actual bombs and mines can't do that anymore. So that's gonna be interesting. I don't know if Rig Cargo is considered a device. I don't know if you'll be able to do that with Iman Azzamin. We're not 100% sure yet. I don't think so, because it's an illicit slot, but just to reference that there.
I don't like his title, though. It says shipping, was it Magnate?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you guys don't know who Iman Azamin is, he was from X-Wing Alliance. You play with his family and everything, and like those are the main characters of that game. If you haven't ever played that game, pretty much 90% of all the things that happen in the X-Wing game that you guys are playing come from the X-Wing video game. So it's very, very similar because it's basically almost copy-pasting half the things that come from that flight simulator.
Was he big into shipping?
They had their own shipping company, and it gets like attacked by pirates, and then you like that's the whole thing is like your character joins like the Rebel Alliance and you know works their ways up, but then every so often you have to do some kind of scummy things and you know go on like these family missions where you have to do like some kind of shady stuff.
Okay, so what would I mean, that his subtitle sounds appropriate. What would you have made it?
I don't know, something better.
Exactly.
I don't know, shipping magnet. No, just sounds so like
no bland. Answer no. I mean, come on, they're not gonna hit home runs with every one of these subtitles. So Kath Scarlet, we forgot to mention that Iman is initiative 4. Also at initiative 4 is Kath Scarlet, whose ability has been totally changed here. Will, can you go ahead and break that down for me?
She's the captain of the binary pirates, by the way. That's her title. While you perform a primary attack, if there's at least one friendly, non-limited ship at range 0 of the defender, roll one additional attack dice. So a friendly, non-limited ship would be a generic ship. Like a binary pirate. Little Z's.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to crash.
Yep.
You go up and block them.
Yeah,
so you put a dead man switch on them and shoot them with a harpoon or something. No, you can't harpoon those. But yeah, you essentially have to be range 0, so that's touching, blocking them.
Yeah. So I like that this is a card. There were very few cards in X-Wing that specifically addressed in first edition blocking. Like there was some, you know, there was ion projector, anti-pursuit lasers, and what was the other one where you touch and lost agility?
Intimidation.
No one ever used that one. I liked that card, but just no one ever used it.
But yeah, so I like when they encourage blocking in the game, and just you're getting some reward for it. Now, of course, you're losing a potential shot, but blocking is such a really good tactic and tool that I like when they reward it. So I'm really a fan of Kath Scarlet's ability here. Crassus Trellix is the Imperial Deserter. What a bad man, just deserting the Empire. Says, you can perform front arc special attacks from your back arc. So he gets to cheat a little bit. He gets to shoot like missiles out the butt.
And I like his ability. I think that's going to be very useful.
And it also says, while you perform a special attack, you may reroll one attack die. So you get a free predator, essentially, on his attack. I think he's going to be a popular one. Just having the flexibility to shoot powerful munitions, is good. Why not? So I think it's pretty self-explanatory there. Then one of our new pilots introduced onto a fire spray, Kashka Frost, the Icy Professional, is her subtitle. And it is confirmed that it's a her in the article. They could call her a her. And it said, while you defend or perform an attack, if the enemy ship is stressed, you may reroll one of your dice. While this sounds really good when you think the mindset of first edition, we haven't seen too many ways to purposely stress your opponent besides Rig Cargo Shoot, have we?
Some like crew members for the Empire.
Okay. But like but this everybody is scum, has, right?
Yeah, that's true. But everybody has a lot more linked actions though.
Okay, so
it might suggest that you don't link your actions and it could be kind of a mind game.
Yeah, that could be it. I like that little bit of like, are you sure you want a K-turn here? Are you sure you want a linked action? That's a good point. A little bit of, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit of counterplay to people choosing to stress themselves. But I think I just think the ability is a little bit niche. Now we'll just have to see how much if we're noticing that people are only taking things with linked actions and constantly stressing themselves and de-stressing, then maybe this is like a list building tech choice where you say, all right, I'm going to take Kashka Frost because people are linked actioning all over the place. So maybe. Let's go ahead and get into the upgrade cards. We're going to break these down by type. One thing that was said in the article says 12 upgrades are included in this pack. But if you count what they spoiled plus what is shown on the threat cards, it actually are 13 of them. Now, maybe one of these cards is part of the like core set or something like that. It's unclear. But it's a little bit of possible inaccuracy there. So we have three different titles for the fire spray. Nate, what is the Slave One title?
The Slave One title. Sorry, Slave One. After reveal a turn hard left or right maneuver, you may change it to a bank maneuver. Gain one stress token. If you do that, set your dial to that.
Stop. You read it wrong.
I read it wrong. After reverb a turn hard left or right, or bank left or right maneuver, you may gain one stress token. If you do, set your dial to the maneuver of the same speed and bearing in the other direction. Also, you add a torpedo slot.
Mm-hmm. So if you went left hard three, you could change it to right hard three.
That's right.
That's it. Yeah, it's not. You're thinking the whole combo with Navigator and all that thing in first edition.
No. You know what I was thinking about? I was thinking about what's the thing that's on the slavers? The fins, the maneuvering fins.
What?
Yeah, I was thinking it was like that, but no. Basically, if you're going left, like with a bank or a hard turn, you can go right with the same thing. So
you might not recognize it because it's Boba Fett's Imperial ability.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, exactly. It's worded differently a little bit, but it does the same thing.
Yeah, it's just essentially if you go left, you can be like, no, I'm going to go right.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you go right, you go, oh, I'm going to go left, which is fine. And I always thought that Boba Fett's Imperial ability was just, even the first time I saw his ability years and years ago, I was like, oh, that's kind of lame.
I think you know what, though? I don't agree with you, Nate. I disagree because it has the potential to set up a lot of different positioning things at higher initiative. So if you, yes, let's say you take it on Boba Fett, right? And your opponent did an unexpected maneuver and you realize, hey, I would rather go left than right. I think it's here's the thing. It's more powerful on the turns than it is the banks. That's one thing to note. On the banks, if you look at, let's say if you made a little map, right, and you did a one bank to the left and then took another ship and took a one bank to the right, starting from the same position, a lot of that arc when it comes to like the range one and range two are going to be overlapping. The edges will start to spread. But the difference in the arcs when you're doing the hard turns and then the options you have after, I think it really opens up some gameplay decisions. You can choose to purposefully bump into somebody to take away a shot if somebody was following you with the missile, or get into range one so that you can use Boba Fett's ability. I think we haven't seen it played because, you know, it just, like, Boba Fett in the Imperial faction in first edition didn't have any other tools other than his ability. This is, hey, you get to do everything else plus this. And I think we're gonna see some play.
That's what I'm saying, is I thought the original Imperial Boba Fett was meh at best, but now that you've made it into a title, it makes it kind of more interesting and viable.
Mm-hmm. And you get a free torpedo spot.
Extra munitions.
Well, I don't even think that's in second edition.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so.
All right, I'll take the next one. So, Andrasta adds a bomb slot. So this is your Iman Azamid, lore-wise, that's his fire spray. And it also adds the reload action to your action bar. That's one thing that I'm starting to get used to looking at these cards. You know, we're used to just looking at the box, that's Xbox, and getting all the information there. Look for that extra information, because some cards might do a little bit more than you thought, and that's the tool they're going to be using here, where if they're giving you an action, they're just going to draw it on there with the graphics. So you get that reload, and with something like Iman Azamin and currently like seismic charges, you can, you know, reload and be able to do those you know, over multiple turns. And we'll get to proximity mines and how you will not be able to reload those here in a little bit. But that's the Andrasta title. Will, can you take the next one, please?
Next one's Cast Scarlet's Marauder. While you perform a primary rearc attack, you may reroll one attack dice. You also receive a gunner slot. It only works in your rearc. But there's some really good gunners for that rear arc, which really kind of combos that. Doesn't look too much on the surface, but it comboing it with like cast cards, extra dice, and what you can do with that gunner slot should be pretty good.
Yeah, and it is important to note that, let's talk about the slots on this. Now, of course, they're not on the cards in second edition, but in the article, hopefully it's accurate, they say you're able to carry a cannon, missiles, devices, crew members, illicits, and modifications. Now, they made all of those plural. I doubt you have multiples of all those. So let's just call it a cannon, a missile, a device, crew member, illicit, and modification. That would mean that only fire sprays with the Marauder title are going to be getting this gunner slot. Otherwise, you don't have it. So that's important to know there.
Yeah, I will say that I like the customizable theme that it has, that each one of these titles adds a new slot to it.
Yep. So, let's continue here. I was mentioning proximity mines. There are two charges. During the system phase, you may spend one charge to drop a proximity mine using the one template, one straight template. This card's charges cannot be recovered. That's important to understand because that means that there's no reload on proximity mines. And just to note, if you're not aware, in second edition, there are two dice, and you take whatever hits and crits are thrown when you hit it. Now, one of the concerns when we first got introduced to second edition, we saw that on reveal bombs existed. Essentially, your mines now do the same thing. They're quote-unquote on reveal. The difference is that what we now call mines, the only difference is now that they stick around. They hang out. So they you know, they just don't explode at the end of activation anymore. They get to stay permanently until they're
Is that even with the seismic
no, because
charges? No, those aren't mines, right?
Right, those are bombs or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
Like they explode at the end of activation.
Are the only mines Conurn and proxy mines? Cluster mines didn't make it over, did they?
Not yet, at least. I haven't seen them. I don't know if we're going to get cluster mines because of how wide it is. But, again, maybe they put it in because now you do have that perfect information. You know that they can always drop it on you. But I don't know, cluster mines seems really good. Even in second edition with something like Iman Azamin and the toning down of all the repositioning and all that, could maybe be a little too good. Veteran Tail Gunner, we talked about already in a previous cast. Same thing with Heavy Laser Cannon. And I do want to talk about Lone Wolf, because Lone Wolf has been changed here. Just a little bit. It says, while you defend, it does have one charge, and it is it does recharge. It has a little arrow next to it. Look for those little arrows. That means that you get to – it's a recharging source. While you defend or perform an attack, if there are no other friendly ships at range 0 to 2, you may spend one charge to reroll one of your dice. So go ahead.
No, this just means that anyone who has Lone Wolf won't be able to use it on like several different attacks. Well, they won't be able to use it for an attack and defense, or they might not be able to use it to defend like two times. You only get to use Lone Wolf once a round now.
Mm-hmm. And it's also important to note that it does work on focus results. It's not just blanks now. So that's a little bit of change.
Yeah, that's a little bit of change. I feel like that's more fair. You get to use it once a round, but it's not as ridiculous as it could be beforehand sometimes. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, there's three ships, but I'm by myself. I get to reroll for everything and attack. Makes people decide.
And then I want to touch on concussion missiles here. This is also revealed in one of the in the kits and stuff like that. But I think it's important to start hitting these munitions again because they've all completely changed. So concussion missiles. Go ahead. Take it, Will.
All right. So this is a attack target lock. Spend one charge of three that you start with. After this attack hits, each ship at range 0 to 1 of the defender exposes one of its damage cards. And exposed would be a flip up.
Mm-hmm.
It's also only a 3 attack, range 2 to 3. But those 3 charges is pretty good. That's and you don't spend the target lock.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't have to spend the target lock for this one either.
Yep, so they brought the power level down on the dice. Said no more 4 dice on this, only 3. You get to do it 3 times, though, and with the possible popularity of swarms, if people are flying in a lot of tight formations, we also – there's – what's the other missile that was a cluster missile? Does even something else. But a lot of these missiles seem to be teched for swarm counterplay. I think the devs kind of looked at this and say – swarms are going to be really good in second edition. We know this. People have to have some answers for it. So I think we're going to see that there. Heavy laser cannon comes in the pack as well. 4 dice. Bullseye firing arc only in the bullseye. Range 2 to 3. And it works the same way as it used to. Change all of the crits to hits after the dice modify step. So that means you cannot reroll like a blanket to a crit and it stays anymore. It goes into a hit. Simple one there. The one I want to spend a little bit of time on is Boba Fett crew. So completely different ability. They totally changed it. They even changed the art on it. They're like, you know what? Let's really give it a fresh face. Sorry, Paul Heaver. Your card is gone. Scum only. Crew card. Setup. Start in reserve. We do know that reserve, if you're not familiar, means to the side of the board. You don't start on the board. You start off the board. At the end of setup, so after everybody's put their ships down, place yourself at range 0 of an obstacle and beyond range 3 of any ship. Now, I know a lot of people are poking fun at this card because you're like, hey, it's like a worse version of Heroes of the Resistance Han Solo. I get it. But here's some of the things that you can, I think, plan for with this crew card if you're going to end up using it. In your rock setup, if you place, you have rocks all over the board, you have the left side and the right side. I'm not saying that you need to put yourself, on your opponent's side of the board and get your ship killed. But if you have 2 rocks, one on the left, one on the right, on your side, you can essentially choose your vector right away. Just be like, all right, I'm going to start here on the right. Now, assuming that the points cost is low enough and cheap, it might be cheap enough just to have there as some tech. You know what I mean?
I don't think it's bad at all. I don't I know people made fun of Resistance Han because he gets one trick at the start of the game and then it's useless. Versus this is a crew. It's not just a pilot. It can be used on a lot of different things in a lot of different ways, which makes it more interesting. I'm thinking right now, what happens if you put on Iman Azmin and you have him facing backwards? Oh, well, then, at the start of the round, he drops a bomb and then moves away. right? Mm-hmm. And thus kind of, you know, deterring you from going, taking certain paths or doing certain things. This has so much more to it.
Yep.
What about that YV666 who could fly off the board?
Moralo Evolve.
Yeah, and she's got Boba Fett. You have no idea where that shit's going.
Round one, it could just basically go off the board and come back behind you on the next turn.
Yep, I mean, there's some cool flexibility here. I like the ability more on a crew card than as a pilot ability.
My only question is, if you start at range zero of a debris or is it an asteroid,
mm-hmm.
Of an obstacle, does that mean you take the damage from it, or do you have to roll from it, or?
I would imagine you put it like next to the mm-hmm. asteroid and not on it,
not overlapping.
Yeah, I mean, but it is called range zero. I think if you do put yourself on the asteroid, you should take the damage. But I think you could just touch it next to the asteroid, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, I would rule it that way. You just had to be, you know, just have your base touching on the edge, and you're at range zero at that point. So those are all the crew cards and the pilots that we are getting in the fire spray. The only thing we don't know is the generic pilot, if there is one, and we will see that. So our next segment here is a listener question that I did want to bring up. It was asked a couple of weeks ago, but with all the craziness that's been going on, we haven't had a chance to get to it, but I think it's important to address. So this question comes from one of our patrons, and his name is Noah Pestana, and he says, "Hey Dion, enjoyed meeting you at Portland System Open. Enjoy seeing you as well, my friend. Meeting you in person was great." And he got to his question here. "Now that we just got the full conversion kit content sheet, do you think that it's okay that FFG is not giving us enough generic pilot ship cards to match the quantities they originally promised, or that they are making Rebel players buy a scum conversion kit to get Maul, as they promised they wouldn't make us buy cross-faction?" So I think that there's two questions in there. We'll start by, I think, hitting the Maul crew one first. And personally, this is not an easy one to answer. I think that FFG, when they look at the Maul crew, they look at it. It is a scum upgrade, period. And as a cute side thing, they're like, "And sure, if you want to put it with Ezra, you can, because it's thematic." I think that's the way they look at it. I personally don't think it's a smart decision if you consider yourself a Rebel player to say, "All right, I guess I have to go buy a scum kit just to get Maul crew." I'm going to tell you, the secondary market is going to be a real thing with X-Wing Second Edition, and I honestly don't think it's going to be super expensive, because a lot of people are going to be looking to trade and sell their extras. So I think if I'm a Rebel player, and, you know, for instance, I, because I'm a crazy person, okay, I'm going to buy maybe multiple of each of the conversion kits. I might buy two of each. I'm starting with one, but we'll get there. If I have two Maul crews, does nothing for me. I'm going to trade it to a friend who doesn't have it or something like that. So I think if you're a role player, if you have a guy in your group who's getting multiple scum conversion kits, you go, "Hey, can I have that extra Maul crew? Thanks. It's useless for you." I think that's your best solution. As for, like, I personally don't look at that as making FFG you do it. Because I think that whole Ezra connection is just fluff. It's like, "Hey, that's kind of cool." And I think part of the reason why this combo is specifically, like, just in the spotlight is because it's really, really good in first edition right now. We don't know if they're going to synergize as well in second edition. yet. I don't think so. Do we know both of their abilities? I'll go ahead and look that up. So what are your guys' thought on all that?
Well, it's a big – the only reason it's such a big deal is because it's literally the only card that is the exception to the rule. And I don't know. I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's just one card. And I think you're right. Like, it's a scum card. It's what it should be. And I don't know if it synergizes that well in the scum faction. That's interesting because it is only the two force users in the scum faction is Asajj and Maul. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of like a uniqueness that they wanted to keep. And that Maul isn't part of the Rebels. And he shouldn't be in the Rebel pack.
I get that. Like, my plan for this and everything is, like, if it's really that big of a deal, just copy it. Like, go to a printer, copy it, put it in the sleeve. No one will notice. I mean, if it's that big of an issue, just go, like, copy it, cut it out, put it in a sleeve. Nobody will know the difference, I promise. Or care about it, really. Like, I understand, like, that's a big deal in Magic, where you have to have the right cards. X-Wing, as long as people kind of know what your list is, it's not as big of a deal, right? Because that's the deal with X-Wing, is that everyone typically has access to the same things. And that's what's great about X-Wing. No one is more overpowered than the other person. We all have access to the same things. So if you're worried about spending an extra X amount of dollars to get that one card, just print it out. I don't think most people will really call you on or really care. And if they do, I mean, I don't know.
And I would say that I would say that in casual play, of course, that's okay. At the highest level events, of course, you're going to want to have your cards and all that. But remember, you can borrow stuff. That's what's awesome. One of my favorite things about the X-Wing community is that it essentially creates for yourself a group of friends that you can rely on. And there's been plenty of times at tournaments where I'm like, hey guys, I only have before they came in the store, because I only have like three crack shots, can I borrow a couple? Like, oh yeah, I'm not using it, here you go. And you just give it back after the event and you're done. Don't buy a scum kit just for Maul crew. Don't do it. I don't think it's worth it. I'm looking up right now to see if we have the Ezra crew card. Let's see. We have the Ezra gunner card. If you do, and you are stressed, you may read. So there's a slight synergy there, but I mean, it's not huge. If you're stressed. I mean, it works, but yeah. So that's how I'm addressing that part. Now, I think the second part, or it actually was the first part of the question, but we're going to address it second, is the question about having enough generic pilots to use. Now, I personally don't know or remember how many were promised at first. Noah, do you guys recall anything about that?
Like how many dials were in each thing or
something?
What do you mean?
So like the question is, like, it says here, do you think it's okay that FFG is not giving us enough generic ship pilot cards?
Like to fill out your own collection? Is that what that's referring to? Like there's not enough dials in the conversion kit?
Yeah.
Or that there's not enough? There's not enough pilots to fly all the dials.
I think maybe that's more the issue.
I'm trying to look up. They just said, or they just had a video on the Imperial conversion kit. I'm trying to look up.
Well, like for instance, how many X-Wings come in the conversion kit? How many X-Wing dials? Two? Okay, two. So then, I could see how someone could complain, like, well, I want to fly, like, you know, five rookie X-Wings and everything.
Well, where are you going to get the dials, though, if you have all the pilot cards? Like, I mean, you get one dial in the core and two dials in the conversion kit. You're just going to need another conversion kit. Like,
yeah, I know some people are complaining about the fact they don't want to have to buy several conversion kits to, like, you know, meet their needs. So if you wanted to do like an X-Wing swarm with like five X-Wings, you'd have to buy, you know, the two conversion kits
and the expansion kits
of like fly all no, five either. Of them.
Yeah, it's, I think that is, that will be a point of contention with some players for sure. And I think, again, I know that some players aren't comfortable with this, but the secondary market is going to be a solution for a lot of people. Now, we do not know if spamming generics is going to be good and or popular. We don't know. But FFG, did they had to make a decision, right? Say, okay, how many of X ship can we fit in this conversion kit and be able to make it all fit, right? They did have to trim and cut here and there. They couldn't give, you know, 10 of everything. And they wanted to make sure that at least most of them are going to be used. I think that was their strategy there.
I originally thought that the conversion kits were going to be like $80, you know, a kit. I'm like, well, that's expensive, but you get a lot in it. But then I heard that, what, they're only $50?
Yep. They're $50.
To convert, like, you know, 90, like, a lot of your stuff. I want to say, like, I mean, $100 to convert, like, I don't know how many ships are, like, it converts and everything. I feel like $100 is pretty good to convert everything, like, twice fold, right?
Yeah, I was looking through it, and it looks like it's about... to
convert? Like, every one, ship. Like, conversion. Every ship? So, there's a couple multiples of each ship, right?
Yeah,
at least two of everything.
I looked through, yeah, at least two. So then what, TIE Fighters get like three, some of the other cheaper ones get three.
I mean, convert like an entire faction,
I think
you can typically do in $50 to $100. I feel like that's fair.
And I agree, Nate. I think if you're a specific faction player, I think that's the route to go. You get two of your kit. And now here is one thing that some people are forgetting or not realizing, at least in competitive play. Let's talk about that. Tournaments and things like that. At first, you're not going to be able to even use everything in that conversion kit. You tournament-wise, you're only going to be able to use what is legal. The legal thing is what's in wave one of the releases.
Well, who said that?
With the exception, that is a quote from Alex Davey.
What?
Crazy. Yes. So at first, the only ships that are legal for Imperials, you have the TIE Advance and the TIE Fighter, you have the Y-Wing and the X-Wing for Rebels, and you have the Protectorate or the Fang Fighter, what they're changing it now to or using that name, the Fang Fighter, the Fire Spray, and now Lando's Falcon. All of those things will be legal in the main tournament setting, barring any other type of unique tournaments where they say, okay, and also this. Now, they said they're going to be turning these out sooner. So we'll have to wait and see there. But there's going to be multiple tournament types. And I like the fact that there are going to be tournaments where it is wave one only, because that's really friendly to the new players coming in. So, like, if anybody who's just starting, all they really have access to is going to be wave one. It's not, personally, I don't think it's worth going back and buying a first edition and then a conversion kit, all that stuff. Just, you know, they can just kind of buy in as they go. So I think that's the reason for that. But again, there's going to be multiple tournament formats, and we are not 100% sure of how the, you know, and this is one thing I'm excited about. Will some of the main events start having different rules? Like, you know, maybe Gen Con has a, you know, 2019 has a different twist compared to Nova Nationals and all that. So we'll see if they start switching there. But Noah, I know that doesn't give like a hard, like, I can feel your upsetness in your question, because I think that you're not super happy about it. But I think don't forget about the secondary market. And once, if you are limited budget wise, I really think one faction is the way to go. Or if you want to go to multiple factions, then you just understand that you're going to have to sacrifice depending on what you get there. And you know what, Noah? How about this? If I get, I'm gonna tell you, this is an offer for Noah and only Noah. If I get a second scum conversion kit, you can have my mall crew card. I'm gonna take care of you, man. I got you. You take care of us, I take care of you. Yeah, man. So we covered a lot of topics today. Thank you, everybody who joined us live. Nate and William, of course, thank you guys so much for joining.
Always, man. Always.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. And as a reminder, we will be streaming live from the TPK Games Store Championships in 2 weeks. It's going to be July 14th on Saturday. It should start around noon, 12:30. I will post a post on Facebook with the exact time. I'm also going to be TOing that one as well, so that should be a lot of fun. And, of course, you can watch all of our X-Wing videos and replays of our streams on our YouTube channel. Just go ahead and look up Gold Squadron Podcast. Don't forget to hit that subscribe and notification button so you can see all those awesome videos that we're going to be dropping there. And, of course, if you enjoy the show and you want to help us continue expanding our content while getting awesome swag, go to patreon.com/goldsquadron. It makes a huge difference. It really does. Patrons, you guys are the ones that drive the force that is Gold Squadron Podcast. And I posted on Patreon the list of events that are coming up that all of these things we're going to be streaming. I'll be making it public here in probably a couple days. But I wanted to show patrons first all the things I'm planning on streaming along with all of the recurring content that's coming through. And anybody who's done the Twitch Prime subscription, thank you so much. Don't forget to hit that button. We had a couple people hit it during the live stream. We had our cool little BB-8 pop up on the board giving you the lighter thumbs up. So thank you, everybody, who's taking the time to do that. And, yeah, so and here's the thing. Don't forget, that's literally free money. Literally free money. So for myself and Nate and William, we are Gold Squadron. Gold Squadron, out.